Blog Talk Radio.
I stroll through the picture, what I've left behind. You want again. I'm locked up in memories, they all intertwine. The memories in my mind. I know tomorrow, 'cause that dawn will come. You will never know what you've done.
Good evening, and welcome to the Stop Child Abuse Now show. And this is scan number 2467. That's 2467. Tonight we have a pastor with us. It's going to be a question and answer discussion with a survivor professional who's using. This is actually an open mic night, okay? Forum. I see, Deborah, that we have a couple people that have called in, and I will get to them in just a second. I want them to know that that I see them here. We're going to have a good show tonight because, do you want me to call you Pastor or just Deborah?
Pastor's fine.
Okay. The pastor is well informed on a lot of different subjects. We were just speaking, and I know that we have a lot of things that we can cover here, and it's going to be a very interesting show. Now, the idea of this, now she also, too, is a survivor, and she knows, of course, all about child abuse and how it can affect us mentally, emotionally, physically, sexually, and from neglect and all the things that we go through. And I don't have to, if your survivor is listening, you already know what I'm saying. If you are not survivors, then you're going to learn some things tonight. Now, this being an open mic night, you can call in. It is 646-595-2118. That's the call-in number for people who are listening. That's 646-595-2118. And you can call in, and don't be bashful about it, okay? Because if you can talk on the phone, you can talk on the show. It's simple, okay? It's easy. And if you have, questions, you don't even have to give your regular name, your real name, whatever makes you feel more comfortable. But, if you have things that are bothering you or things you'd like answers to, tonight is a night, to call in. And we do this on Tuesdays and Thursday nights, okay? So right now I am going to read the mission statement. I do that every Tuesday and Friday night. And that is to have a single purpose. We here at NASCA have a single purpose to address issues related to child abuse and trauma, including sexual assault, violent and physical abuse, emotional traumas, and neglect. And we do so two different ways, and that, of course, is educating the public. That is so, so, so important. And especially, though, related to the, getting over the taboo of sexual abuse. Seems like people are still having a problem, talking about that, but it is so out there, and so very, very important that we do speak about that. Then offering, too, hope and healing through numerous paths, providing many services to adult survivors of child abuse and information for anyone interested in the many issues involving prevention, intervention, and recovery. Okay, that's a little bit of what we do here at NASCA. I want people also, too, to keep in mind that they can go to, the website, our website, www.nasca.org, nasca.org, and you'll find an awful lot of wealth, as I like to say, of information on that. And we have, like, red blocks, if you will, red lines, and it gives all kinds of programs you can look up, and the highlights page speaks an awful lot about all different types of subjects. So it's important that people do know about, that page. So let's get to our guests, okay? And Pastor, I just want you to know that I'm very happy that you're here. And I'm going to open up the mics of the two other people here. There's a 318 area code. 318, who am I speaking to? Hello, hello, 318? Okay. Sometimes people call in, they just want to listen, and that's okay, too. Let me go down to 409. That sounds more something that I would recognize here. 409, who am I speaking to?
Roberta.
Roberta, there we go. That's fine. All right, yeah, I knew it. That sounded familiar. I'm glad you're here, Roberta. We have a pastor on here tonight that has seems to know an awful lot about a lot of different things, and I think that's good. So I'm glad she's here. And so let me get her saved in here. And the 318 area code, I don't know. I guess they just dropped off. I don't know where they went. Doesn't matter. Oh, okay. So let's get started. Do you have anything on your mind tonight that you'd like to talk about, Roberta? Is there something that you'd like to have addressed?
Well, I was just coming on to listen. I really wasn't really thinking of anything, really, but I mean, I can tell you a lot of things that I thought about today and, you know, kind of bother me and I could talk about, but maybe I'll think about them later. I'm just want to listen right now.
Okay, that's good. That's good, honey. And I do that. Yeah, their 318 is back again. Maybe they just want to listen. I'll get back to you, 318. Okay, Pastor, we were talking about certain things before the show. That sounded awfully interesting. And one thing that someone has asked me just recently, they seem to have problems with their stomach. They've got problems with their head. They got problems all over the place. They're aching. Now I have fibromyalgia, so I immediately think of that. But they go to the doctors and they say, "Doc, I hurt here, I hurt there." And I think to myself, look at the world that we're living in. We're all so filled with anguish and stress. And what would you say to someone who is constantly, chronically ill, you know, going to the doctors and they come up with nothing? They do blood work, they do, you know, tests of all different kinds. And this is a troubling time that we're in. I think it's somewhat, one has something to do with the other. What do you think?
From my past experience as being a mental health counselor, working in hospitals, mental health units, working with people who've had spinal cord injuries. I am now a pastor. I am well aware of the connection between the body and the emotions, or what you call the soul. And some people, you know, sort of see it when somebody has an amputation of a foot or a leg, but they still feel it there. So when that happens, people are not really in tune to the power of emotional pain, thoughts, how they can release hormones, adrenaline, cortisol, can induce all kinds of biological reactions in the brain. Our five senses are involved. And once those chemicals get released, they also can be held in memories. And so through both, we call it in the mental health world, you would call it the subconscious, there is pain. And it is easily the best way I always explain it is, you're sitting there and you look at a wall socket. And your eyes and your ears hear a pop, your eyes see a light. Within nanoseconds from hearing and seeing, your subconscious decides, I either got to get up, put out a fire, something's going to happen, I got to run away. The hormones get turned on, adrenaline, cortisol, sugars released into the body to do something. The eyes and ears have heard something or seen something. The body reacts to that in preparation to solving it. When you have emotional pain, or you jump at the light, you know, you're in the market or something, and you hear something that and a memory flashes and you jump. It's the same thing. Automatic survival skills kick in, flight or fight, adrenaline, sugar, hormones, dope, everything is kicked in order to survive, run, fight, whatever. But if there's no perceived, like somebody attacking you physically, but the hormones and everything can still get turned on. And if they get turned on a lot or in great amounts, they take adrenaline when it is going. Like, say, for firefighters or if you call policemen is in count, takes 36 hours for the adrenaline to subside in the body. Some people live in their adrenal glands on the top of their kidneys stay in chronic crisis releasing of the hormones, their thoughts and stuff. And they'll eventually just wear out, get tired. If they live under constant stress, the body will feel it. There is a connection. That is why in a lot of things like meditation where you take in deep breaths, you're getting in oxygen into the bloodstream. It changes what's going on. If you do aromatherapy, your nose is breathing in chemicals. It is changing the biological brain, which brings in a soothing, maybe a certain smell that's soothing to you. Biologically, the brain is changing. The emotions calm down. You get in a bathtub with bubbles. You feel relaxed. So the body and the subconscious are very connected. So when I work with many people, there's no physical. We've done all the tests. There's nothing there. Then a smart therapist or a pastor, no, there's something there emotionally. The stress hormones have been turned on for too long. There's chronic toxicity. You're not sleeping at night. You know, you're having nightmares. And a smart therapist will know that. Your primary care doctors, they're not really trained. They want to see a sore throat, see a blood test, see an x-ray. That's all they know.
Right.
And they can refer you. I like to even tell my husband, you must become an advocate for your own health. If you go to the primary care doctors, he says, well, I've done all the blood tests, there's nothing. Could you please refer me to a psychiatrist or a therapist? You must be an advocate for your own health, even your own mental health. And even if you don't have memories of the abuse, or maybe you do know, but you're embarrassed to tell your primary care doctor, because most of us believe if that is the cause, I'm having emotional / mental problems that are causing me biological pain, and I must be crazy or mental. So we don't want that, so we will keep pressing to find a biological reason, maybe a tumor, okay, or low blood pressure or diabetes. We can accept that for our pain easier than admitting we can't handle our emotions or that we have had something from our childhood that is still bothering us, because we're supposed to be, we're smart, and we're supposed to have it all together. And, you know, I hadn't told anybody my story. So if I admit that to even the primary care that I need a referral, then somebody's going to think I'm crazy and nuts. And so we don't do that. We stay in the biological body hoping the doctor will find something and just give us that magic pill and it'll all go away.
So let me say something here. Well, let me slow you down a little bit. So what you're saying is when we go to the doctor, now we're survivors, okay, we've had all kinds of different abuses in our life, and some of us have had all, it doesn't matter. And the point is we ache here, we ache there, we went, and we go through all this stuff. And so then the doctor looks at it. Well, I'll take an X-ray. I'll give this person pain medication. I will give them an antibiotic. And maybe the urine came back a little, you know, a little with a little type of infection in it, whatever. That can't happen, you know. But they would treat the symptoms instead of actually seeing the core issue, okay, of the problem.
The primary care physician's not trained for that. He's there, he's the gatekeeper. Oh, you have a little fever? Here's an antibiotic. Oh, let's tinkle in the cup. Oh, you got a little blood in your... Well, here's the medicine. And unless you really... And they really work close in a unit, or you end up in the hospital, okay, and a heart doctor or a cancer doctor takes over, okay, and at that point, the primary care doctor's out of it. But his is biological, okay? Some of them may have had some training in depression, and you just tell them, well, I can't sleep, you know, I'm feeling kind of depressed. And you get your blood work done because you can have low blood sugar or low thyroid, and that can make you feel sluggish, and they'll go there. But and most of us want that to be the answer because that's easily fixable, and it doesn't put any light on our handling of our emotions, or we don't have to expose our past life, and we don't advocate for that even with our primary care doctors. And we just stay silent, and, you know, we're hoping that the medicine works and we go on with life.
Yeah. I agree with that. I see so many people that are, you know, symptomatic, but not knowing where, you know, not knowing why. And that's what, what the doctors write down. It's almost like they're a hypochondriac. And many times people who are hypochondriac, I wonder, I mean, I don't know their lives, but I wonder if maybe they didn't suffer from trauma somewhere. And that's why they have aches and pains and all this stuff going on all at the same time, you know. What I'd like to do here. Yeah, I think so.
But
let me
reason.
Oh yeah. Let me bring on it can be either or. Let me bring on Pamela, because somewhere I lost her before, I don't know. Let's see if she wants to speak. Pamela, are you there?
Yes, I'm here. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can. I didn't know if you wanted to just listen or if you want to be a part of the panel. I think you want to be a part of the panel. I remember who you are now. Am I correct?
Hi, Carol. How are you?
Oh, I'm fine. I'm fine, honey.
I love it when you're on.
Oh, thank you. I appreciate that. I appreciate that. It's good hearing that. You know, everyone needs a little boost once in a while in the right direction. You know. But anyway, yeah, we have the pastor on tonight, and you can ask her any kind of question that you might have. You know, like, you know, if you have any pains, aches, or if it's a mental thing, or if it's an emotional thing. Listen, we have complications when we've been abused, and it can be actually learning disabilities, attention deficit disorder, hyperactivity. You have behavioral issues, and this isn't just when you're a kid either. Okay, this happens. It goes into adulthood. You know, it affects us in so many different ways. Some of us try to commit suicide, or there's self injury. You know, there's high risk sexual behaviors in teens, and especially, you know, they become very promiscuous and things like that. People out there do not realize what we go through. Okay, that's one of the reasons why we have this show, because we're trying to educate the public, those who don't understand child abuse and how it does affect us in such a negative way. And until we get the help that we need, someone we trust and also who understands child abuse. Yes, right now we're speaking about how it affects us physically and mentally. And it affects us all different ways, emotionally very bad. We can't have relationships that are right, because we didn't have any relationships when we were kids, you know, that were right. Simple as that.
you know, the core issue, you know, where we came from in our family dynamics, what happened there, what type of, you know, background we've come from. And this is what helps form us. And many times we have a battle. We have a battle in our head. We have a battle in our body, wherever, which way it does affect us. You can't just get over it. You can stuff it down. You can shove your emotions down. And then all of a sudden, one way or another, man, you're going to explode, you know, because you have all of this stuff.
Well, I'm 63 now. It started when I was 40. They let me know that I had bipolar. Am I talking to the pastor now?
Yeah, I'm listening.
Oh, okay. Pastor, I was 40 when they discovered I was bipolar, and I put my family through hell, you know, as I was finding this out. You know what bipolar is when it's untreated.
Yes, ma'am.
I would go into rages, and it would be cyclical. It would be like 2 days out of every month. You know what I'm saying? And at first I thought it was like PMS, premenstrual cycle stuff, and it wasn't that. Ruled out many other things. And then finally, when I was crawling around on the floor in the emergency room doctor clicked, said he knows what it is because his wife had it. So finally I get diagnosed right, and I get on the right medications, and I don't have an episode since. Isn't that amazing? That's the Lord.
Well, what they know about bipolar and mental health is that the psychiatrists believe that these behaviors or your feelings, or bipolar is you're swinging emotionally into agitation or just go, or you're depressed. It's back and forth. I mean, we all do it every single day. Some days we're better. But you get stuck and stuff. And the psychiatrist, they believe, because they're trained, that there's a chemical imbalance somewhere in your biological brain that's causing this. And if they can balance out the chemicals, I know my brother took lithium, which was actually a derivative of pig urine, a salt. They know that these chemicals that are either exploding too much, not enough, sort of like your thyroid, you can have hypothyroid or hyperthyroid. If they get the right chemical to your brain, these behaviors that you are experiencing and the emotions with it will get under control.
Well,
and they
will.
On what?
Pamela, let her ask a question. I think she's got something she wants to ask or something.
Okay, so they put you on Depakote?
Yeah, that's a mood stabilizer.
Okay. And their philosophy as psychiatrist is this is simple. They don't know the cause. They know some chemicals imbalance in your system for whatever reason. And if they get the right medication to you, these abnormal behaviors and feelings will be under control. And that's where it pretty much stops. Now, they don't know at the time if that is caused from early childhood, early trauma, head injuries. At the time you're in the emergency room, they're just trying to get the behaviors. And a lot of the psychiatrists, you know, they don't really believe in that trauma and that it could do this later. But they know if I get the correct medication in the right amount, these weird behaviors will cease. And you'll be able to go on.
Yeah. I was sexually abused from the age of 4 to 18 by my mother's second husband. She took me to him. He sold me to him.
Okay.
And there was also emotional and physical abuse for 14 years of my life. So, you know, so definitely I had living constantly in fight or flight, you know.
Yeah, your cortisol, it was all just 24/7, you know, and when that's going on in a child, it actually
mm-hmm.
will affect your neurons, your traveling systems, the electron. It will, the brain is developing. It can be developed differently than what would without it. You live in that high anxiety, the hormones, the chemicals, the cortisol, mm-hmm. the adrenaline, all the time. It will biologically mess everything up that's supposed to be balanced, like your blood
right.
sugar's supposed to be balanced, your water intake, your salt intake. There's a fine
mm-hmm.
balance in our brain of all types of chemicals. That's what the psychiatrist study. And with certain imbalances, they may not know what causes it. They don't, a lot of them don't go, well, let's go back to these years. No, their first thing is let's get the behaviors under control. Then if they are
mm-hmm.
good psychiatrists, they would refer you to one who maybe it deals with the what they think is the cause of manic depressive, bipolar,
right.
you know, and you would start a therapy program with a psychiatrist so they could tweak and manage the medicine, or there might be a social worker and you're going to have, you know, they're going to do some therapy or hypnosis or meditation. But they're pretty much, my brother was diagnosed with bipolar. And he was manic depressive and borderline personality.
Makes
and,
sense. Oh, boy. Whoa.
Huh?
Let me stop you guys right there. Wow. Because I used to work at Greystone Psychiatric. When you are bipolar and then also
uh-huh.
to be a borderline personality disorder,
uh-huh.
Borderline personality disorder is considered to be the worst of all of them, but bipolar
yeah.
with that too
yeah.
is that's
yeah.
that's a heavy right there. I want to say something
well,
to you, Pastor.
Uh-huh.
Okay,
mm-hmm.
I want to say something to you. I used to watch the psychiatrist. I'm not a psychiatrist. I was a technician.
Uh-huh.
State technician, but I watched all this, and
mm-hmm.
So I know exactly what you're talking about. But what I want to do too is go down to our other guest here that we have here, you know, some on the panel, because I don't want her to feel left out. Thank you so much for Pamela for you know, for your questions and listening and learning. Let me go down to Roberta from Texas. Okay, do you have something that you'd like to ask the pastor?
Well, I was thinking about because I was in so many households and so many traumas and even at birth I had health problems and I've had health problems all my life and I don't know how early my child abuse started. I don't even know, but I am learning some things now that helped cause a lot of my abuse that. You know, I'm just now at the beginnings of my healing journey, and I have things that trouble me sometimes in my spirit and in my soul and in my heart, and I haven't really gotten all the pain, anger, and grief out, but I guess my question would be, will I have to know, like, where the abuse started, or just be glad that it's all coming to the light?
Okay. It really depends on you. Some people don't want to know. Okay.
Yeah.
Other people go, hey, I don't really care when it happens. I don't, and most of us, if you understand the human brain, most of us don't have memories. Even at the beginning, maybe most of us don't remember kindergarten. We get bits and pieces of it, but we don't have full memory of our daily lives. We got a little shot here and a little shot there, and then how many of you remember your first grade teacher and all the stuff you did and all the games? We don't. The brain didn't really record that. This was in child development. A lot of that detail. Okay, in our brain. till much later when we actually start learning. And so some people want to know, okay, and they will choose a therapy, maybe like hypnosis, and try to get in touch with that little child or that, and to find out. Other people don't care. Hey, it's over with and done with. I just need healing. Okay, can't change it. Okay, it's over in the past. There's nothing I can do about it. The people that did it, they're dead, they're gone, and nothing, I can't talk to them. Okay, so it really depends on you and what you want to know. And
yeah.
As a pastor, okay, or in, God himself knows when it happened. You can ask him if you truly want to know. Some people, like I said, go, hey, I can't remember. Why drag it up? It was probably icky and bad. I don't want to see it. I don't want to remember it. It's lost and gone forever. Okay, I have bits and pieces of my at 4 or 5, but I don't have the full year. Okay,
mm-hmm.
And so some of us, I'm sure I got spanked. I don't remember it. Sure, I got in trouble. Don't remember it. Don't remember everything. So it's up to you. If a therapist you trust says, it's not that important, you pray about it, and God says, don't worry about it. Just forget about it. You aren't going to know all the details. Okay, you don't, and sometimes reliving that, to see it, and in some hypnosis, they want you to go back through it. Okay,
yeah.
And they want you to see it and experience every pain and look at it and face it directly. And so you can get in touch with this lost anger. Okay, well, I'm a great philosophy. If it's lost, just let it stay lost.
Yeah.
Can't do any good, but everybody is different.
Yeah, just pray God's will. Yeah, just pray God's will, because I'm at the point now where...
If you're connected to God and he don't want you to know it, you might
say,
I don't want to know. You may not be... I had a lady I worked with. She had satanic ritual abuse. And it's worse than anything you guys have ever been through. Okay, unless you've been in it. And God wouldn't even bring to her memory most of it. She couldn't handle it. It's stuff we don't even want to look at when we see people killed. So some things are left better buried and dead. But a lot of therapists do believe we can tap into it. They're doing that now. A lot. They tried to do a lot of that with early drugs of LSD and stuff. And so some people are trying, believing, if I tap into it, I relive the experience in hypnosis or something. And I go back as a child, and I stand by and watch myself this happen. I'll know what it was. And some people go, well, I don't know if it's true or not. And I can't even believe it happened. And I need to know that it happened. And so everybody's therapy style and belief are different. This one psychiatrist I work with, his philosophy was, if I hypnotize you and we get down to that level and you relive it, he said, I feel like I am participating in re-raping and re-traumatizing you again. I won't do it. But some therapists and psychiatrists believe that is how you feel, and that's necessary. So you have to have a talk with your therapist or psychiatrist and what their philosophy is about memories.
Yeah.
Now, back
well,
in the 80s, a lot of people were going to therapists, and they were all of a sudden remembering that their parents had abused them, and they were taking them to court. And what happened was the parents rose up and formed this false memory syndrome and this group and said the therapist implanted this idea in hypnosis or imagery into the patient who had problems since childhood with the parents. They'd go to court and they would prove that this was wrong. The therapist implanted. So there's been a long history with therapists and memories hypnosis, imagery, parents, courts, legal stuff. And so a lot of therapists, they go, I don't want to get sued. I don't want to lose my life. I'm not going there. And that's why a lot of them don't pursue a lot of the lost memories.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think, too, let me say something here, Pastor. I think, too, there are some people, okay, there are some people that have questions, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's like, I like to say, like putting a puzzle together. And maybe they're having flashbacks. That could happen, too. And they're trying to figure out, you know, what these dreams, these flashbacks to, what they mean. And are they just nightmares? Where are these nightmares coming from? And they don't have a full picture of themselves. And when a person doesn't have a full picture of themselves, many times they feel like there's an emptiness. There's something funny inside, something that I'm not knowing or seeing.
Mm-hmm.
I agree that with a lot of people, if they can, if it doesn't bother them, okay, to have questions about their past, and they don't feel like going in for heavy-duty therapy. They want to do a little bit of a, soul-searching themselves and finding things out on their own. That can put the puzzle together, and then they have a more whole picture of who they are, where they're going, where they came from, and things like that. And that can be very beneficial. However, you are putting yourself at risk. Because if you do find out things that you really can't handle mentally, maybe they're horrific things that you are blocking out, okay, then you certainly need the help of a therapist who knows your background, who can help you, you know, with the feelings that you're going to experience. And that's
well,
what we always say on the show.
Yeah,
well, that's
therapy.
What we always say on the show, you know, if you want to find out your background and all this other stuff, make sure, you know, if you have repressed memories, make sure that you do have a therapist who can help you. Okay, go ahead. Who is speaking? Who's going to speak first? Go ahead.
Okay, and what you do is it's sort of like if you were looking to buy some clothes to make you feel better and pretty. When you're going after healing, you need to find out what your primary care doctor knows, so connected to a group where they're psychiatrists. What is the training of your therapist? Or is like the support group like AA? They mainly deal with alcohol. Some CA deals with Cocaine Anonymous. There's not a lot of support groups for child abuse adults. You know, they get off, if you go into a therapy, inpatient therapy program, it's mainly for drugs or alcohol. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
And that's pretty. So you have to be intelligently informed, do some research, talk to some therapists. Some have had great training. They are certified in the repressed memories. That is their expertise. They work with just child abuse people or adults who have this. Others don't. They just deal with the average depression, you know, or something. And some are women. A lot of therapists have been abused themselves, and it's very traumatic for them. And if you're a female and you're going to a male, ooh, I don't know. You know, so you have to do a lot of research why you want to have therapy. What are you trying to get healed? Like in the case of that lady with the bipolar, once they believe they get the brain chemistry balanced, then you can enter into a therapy or a therapist, and you can at least talk and deal with your emotions that are going to come up. And you're connected to a psychiatrist, so he needs to put you in a hospital. Because the stuff, when it comes, sometimes it explodes. Others, it's so hard to accept that people that you have an impression of. Other people go, hey, that was another life, a childhood. I'm not that person. Got a loving family now, lovely children and grandchildren. Let the dead dogs lie dead. Some people are like that. And other people just are curious and want to know. And they've exhausted all the medical doctors, and there's nothing there. cancer. Mm-hmm. No, you know, broken leg, you don't have low blood pressure and diabetes, and they can't figure it out in the flashbacks. Now, if you were in the military and you were in war, they have proof that they have, you know, what the flashbacks are.
Right.
But for an adult from child abuse, unless you got used in child pornography, and it's out there on the internet, okay, and they can recognize you don't look like what you did as a child or even as a teenager, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And so they couldn't prove a lot of this. And if the abusers are gone and dead, they ain't going to talk. So it's just you dealing with yourself. And some people have to, it takes a long time to get first the biological part sort of balanced. Then they're ready to deal with the deep trauma that needs to occur. They got their support system with them. Maybe they've gotten off of drugs or alcohol and they're doing good. Now they're ready. Okay, they're stable. They got a job or a family. They got some loving people around. They had some qualified, caring therapists. Now they're ready to explore that level or that, you know, early childhood, because they got everything
right
around them they need. So when, you know, the stuff hits, they got a loving family and some great stories to read. One, Patty Duke Austin. She, you know, she was a movie star and stuff, and she ended up getting diagnosed as a schizophrenia, and she was suicidal, okay? Now, what happened was her kids stayed with her. They had to change her diet, her work schedule. She had still a lot of episodes, and one of my aunts was a paranoid schizophrenic. She'd run around outside without any clothes on. The kids stayed with her. They finally got her stabilized. Now, I didn't hear a lot, but so if you have a support system around you, a psychiatrist, a caring primary care, maybe a church, some women's groups, NASCA, you can venture then when you're ready, if you want to, into the darkness to see what's there. Other people,
it's personal choice, too. Yeah,
yes,
it's a matter of personal choice.
If I want to make that personal choice, you know, and and other people, you know, that are part of the people that did the abuse and they're trying to discourage me, it isn't their right to tell me to not venture into the darkness and get set into the light, you know.
If you know that they are the abusers, okay, what you would have to do is get you a good primary care doctor that you feel supportive, get referred to a psychiatrist that you love and you know you know, because it's, you don't fit with everybody. Get with a good therapist, okay? Maybe have a good pastor, church group, or something. Okay, and venture out. Even if others are telling you don't, you have that supportive network. Now, some people don't do it; they just journal. They write what they can, and they trust God to bring back what they can't remember, you know, and the rest they don't worry about because they're not ready to remember. It's too horrific. And if God is the pastor, if he's guiding you through the healing process, there's some doors he ain't going to open for you. Okay, and some he'll open and walk with you in it.
I feel like God wants to walk me through this door because I've been trying to find out where, you know, I may not, like you said, know everything all about the incident, but whenever you go through kidnapping and rape and you're not even reported as a missing person, you don't know what happened to your body before and afterwards and all that.
No,
you want to know. You know.
Well,
you want to know what was done to your body.
Yeah. Well, how God works is he will help. He helps the child to survive. The spirit leaves the body. He puts the amnesia in there, and if you study God enough, he says, look, for my own sake, I will forget all your ick. I'm not going to remember it for my sake. So sometimes he doesn't want you. And that's something, if you're a Christian or whatever, between you and God, you have to work out. It might be too bad for you to know all the truth and just trust God that you move on. Other times you have to be ready, because if the truth is so horrible,
whatever his will is,
and you may not be ready for what the truth is, and
he'll never give me too much you can't handle.
That's right. And sometimes you can get a little bit, and you're not ready for the big stuff, because some of it's not very pretty. And he doesn't want you to remember. He wants you to love your family, your grandkids, get on with life. Let the victory of that life and defeat those bad memories. Because as long as God looks at it this way, you stay in the bad memories, in that darkness, you are still being controlled, manipulated. Satan's winning. So evil is gotcha. You're reliving it.
True.
You're in pain.
That's true.
Sometimes he says, let your new life that you have now with your family, whatever, be the victory. And in fact, you had a chance to kill me, but you didn't. You had a chance to totally destroy me, and you couldn't. I'm still here. I may not be who I was intended to always be. I have a loving family and grandchildren. And you didn't.
You're still standing there, Roberta.
I may not. And think of some of the soldiers. They go into a battle and they come back with no legs. And their family still loves them. Their kids still love them. They still have a life, and they go, this isn't going to stop me. So sometimes the attitude has to be, should it kill me? Because now my prayers are going to protect the children. It had a chance to wipe me out, and it didn't. God had other plans for me. I am not going to turn back to that. That was over with and done. It's buried. That person it happened to died. It's not existing anymore. And so it's a different viewpoint versus trying. Sometimes people write their story, and they go, once they write the book, they're done.
Yeah.
Whatever they remember.
You just described me.
They remember it. They close the book, and that life is now sealed and shut. It's in the book. But they go on with their family. They got grandchildren.
Yeah.
And they help people. They become an advocate. So sometimes there is a time to just say, forget the past. It happened. Okay? Hey, stuff happened. I couldn't do it, but God protected me. I'm still here. I'm not locked up in a mental health ward. I haven't gone completely crazy. I got some issues, but they ain't, okay? I got a lovely family. So whatever, I survived it, and I'm moving on. So sometimes it's that kind of attitude.
Amen to that.
A survivor has to have.
I'll second that, and I'm sure that Pamela will too, and I know she's still there. Okay, let's go to Pamela, because I want everyone to have a time to be able to speak or to make comments or to ask questions. Go ahead, Pamela. Is there something that you'd like to ask or something you'd like to add here? Pamela, are you there?
Yes, I'm here.
Are you all right?
Yes.
Okay.
I'm here.
Okay.
Yeah,
don't call me ma'am. I told you that last time. Just call me Carol. That ages me or something. I don't know what it does. Go ahead, honey. I'm teasing you. You know that.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Yes. I never thought I would have to face what happened to me. I just, stepped it down. Had my family, was going on as usual, just trying to be happy. But then I went into a 6-month depression, and I didn't know why. What I'd done is taken my anger and turned it inside. And believe it or not, through that 6-month depression, the Lord saved me, okay? So So I'm thinking, you know, I've got a new life in Christ, and I go on, and I'm living for Him, and, you know, just everything's great. I'm going to heaven now, you know, that nothing could be better than that. And so I'm thinking, I'm a new creation. I'll never have to face what I went through again. Well, that wasn't true. God brought it back in the 50s with the overwhelming, well, it wasn't overwhelming because of Him, but He needed me to deal with it. So what happened was I ended up going in the hospital again, and my sister, who had witnessed what had happened to me, was just as crazy as I was at the time. And she started calling my abuser and threatening him. And so they tried to take me to court to get my reputation. And during the course of that, he ended up trying to get a protective order against me, and he called the police to come and help him fill it out. Well, he confessed. The reason he confessed to the police that he abused me was because he thought criminal prescription had run out and he couldn't touch me. Well, that I couldn't touch him. Well, that was absolutely true. But what happened when he confessed to the police, he actually ended up opening the case again and broke my privacy rights, and he caused a tort injury going forward. And I ended up taking the court. It went to court for five years, twice to the Louisiana Appellate Court and twice to Louisiana Supreme Court. 2 weeks out from the court date, they settled. So you never know what God's going to do, you know? Just all I can say, Roberta, is put your heart in His hands. And my heart, I searched my heart for that whole 5 years to say, Lord, am I trying to get revenge? You know, is this something? And I talked to an evangelist about it, and he said, you know, if you're doing it for redemption, then you're doing it for the right reason. Well, what ended up happening was that my counsel was this man, my counselor, my lawyer, and he said that, you know, that we definitely had a case, and he felt like God wanted us to go through it. And then, of course, I got healed, complete closure and healing, and I wrote my book, which is on the NASA website. And then, of course, my abuser got mercy. You know, he didn't go to jail. And I think that was mercy on God's part. You know, he couldn't go to jail. But I did get his savings. I mean, he did pay somehow on his earth, you know.
And you know, that's important. That's important, Pamela, because so often, when we get abused, yeah, and we go through years of abuse, all right, and there just seems to be no justification anywhere, no matter which way we turn, you know. The court system doesn't help. One guy that got a hold of me and myself and 14 other little girls, that's ridiculous, only got 3 years imprisonment. 3 years! And I was sitting in the courtroom. I was 8 years old. This is in Staten Island, New York. I used to live in New York. I'm from New York. And I'm standing there. I'm thinking, I'm 8 years old. And when he gets out, I'll be 11. And he knows where I live. You know, and I was scared. And all we little girls, all of us that he had abused that they knew of, don't forget. We know of a number, but we don't know if that's the exact number. That's if we know this. And one little girl was so frightened, she actually urinated on the floor right next to me. And, I mean, it was a horrific, horrific thing to go into court. And they thought that it was going to be helpful for us to go into court. This is what, you know, they thought. And instead, I didn't want to see that monster again. I just wanted him out of my life, you know. And but people don't understand. They don't understand. They don't get it, you know, until we talk to them straight out, straight up. And we always hope that those people who abused us, all right, whether it be for 1 year, whether it be one time, whether it be for 15 years, well, my God, last time I was raped, I was 17, okay? And some of it was in the family, some of it wasn't in the family, all right? And I wanted all of those people to die. I wanted them to die because of what they had done to me. Well, I don't think that's a terribly abnormal feeling for me because look at what they had done, right? So,
right.
Finally, one day, though, I got so tired, Pastor. Okay, now I'll speak to you.
Huh?
I got so tired of hating. Of hating?
Yeah. Yeah,
I just fell to the ground. I fell down to the ground. And I couldn't hate anymore. I was just too tired of hating. I couldn't do it. I don't say I love them. I don't even say I forgive them. I can't do that, and I don't feel like I have to, okay? I gave it to God. You're bigger than me.
Yeah.
You're tougher than me. And that's just the way it is, you know. And I got on with my life. And, yes, I wrote my book. And yes, after you had mentioned, or Pamela, someone had mentioned, I don't know, you close the book, and then you move on, and you go, and you become an advocate. I think that was you that spoke that. And that's what I did, okay? And but first I had to find out that I wasn't crazy, because I've been told all my life that I was crazy. So I went to, to seek some help, and they gave me a battery of tests, and they found out that I wasn't crazy. And that was the best high I ever had in my life.
Amen.
There you go. Yes,
you know,
amen is right.
The district judge that started the whole thing, that kept saying it can keep going, he actually apologized from the bench to me, saying he was so sorry that I had to go through that. Do you know him, how empowering and validating that was? I just wanted to drop to my knees and cry, because in a way he represented God on earth to me. You know what I'm saying?
Yes, I do.
It was amazing. It was just amazing.
Well, I never expected any apology from those people. Go ahead. Sure, go ahead.
I wanted to ask the pastor, what is emotional intelligence?
There's a lot of big talk about that. I took a training on it. It's about having knowledge of your emotions. Intelligence means how intelligent are you and in touch with your emotions and how they can be used. They use it a lot in business, how to be in touch with, but it can also be used, how can I get over you? If I know how you're emotionally responding, I can be smarter than you. It's just getting in touch with your another person's feelings, your own feelings, and typically they use that for improvement in professional skills, businesses, learning how to size up emotionally your customers, how to size up somebody you want to sell a product to and tap into, you know, emotions that would get them. We see it a lot when you watch a speaker and they smile pretty. They move their hands and they are going, Hitler was good at this. A lot of your politicians, they want to emotionally get you to respond that you like them. It don't matter what they say. Their smile, you like their dress. They want an emotional response of love, admiration from you. And so they are very wise, smart people. They understand how emotions help you make decisions. Your parents, I love you, while they're doing things. So emotions are a part of abuse. And if somebody is very smart, this is where you get into human trafficking. The parents have already groomed the child by neglect or abuse. There's an emptiness. The traffickers already know that this child has an empty hole. So through emotional intelligence, they come in and say all the right words. Everything that empty child would want to hear. And they would emotionally bond with the trafficker. Now, a lot of people in human trafficking say that the trafficker has groomed the child, but that's not true. Sure, they would all just, the parents have already groomed, prepared the child to run from home, run into the arms of somebody that will, I love you. They're so needy for that affection, validation. They've been so abused at home, they run from that. Now they're used to it, so they meet a trafficker. and the trafficker doesn't do anything at first, I love you, whatever you need, then they associate love with this, and they'll do anything for the trafficker. But if in human trafficking, if they point the finger to the parents, or the parent, or the culture, or the religion, okay, the faith, okay, to this child, then you're going back to the very beginnings of early shaping and forming of a child. And yeah, childhood, the most important link and the anchor of the soul is the mother's love and acceptance. If that is destroyed, then the child is not validated. There's a disconnect. Love is not the anchor. It's not the father that does it. He's usually gone. He's with the mama. If she doesn't put him, okay? The mama's eyes, the mama's voice, the tenderness, the love. Now, a lot of mothers do that, and then a child, but at the same time, okay, so a child is groomed by the parent or aunties or family or whoever, cousins, uncles, whatever, by brothers and sisters who will abuse you. Now they are ready to run and be prepared for the trafficking, the child pornography. Some parents, if you study it, they sell their children for food. Yep. They sell them into the system. They want them, okay, they need money, they need drugs. I have been privileged to hear parents sell their grandchildren for power and privilege. Satan, you can have my first grandchild if you will give me this. Their people are bought and sold all the time for anything. I saw one lady on the TV. She said, if I didn't have my abortion, I wouldn't have this Hollywood job. I wouldn't have that big house. And the only way I got it was killing that baby. Okay? So people will set people when there's issues, okay? Even a Christian will sell out. We know that. We see it in all faiths. Okay? The hearts are not right. It can be the most pious person. Okay? Right. They're not there. Okay? So what happens is that you have one on here. I got to know the human heart. I have to know about the lust of the flesh. I have to know where they're trying to point the finger at the traffickers. Now, they are in a business. They're going to make money. Mm-hmm. They need a product to make it sell. So here comes a child, and the parents get the product ready for selling, burning, okay? And at the same time, you got wicked people, hearts, that can't control it. And I'll tell you a great story how a lot of the Catholic Church got one. St. Augustine, he had a problem with a zipper. So he goes into a monastery because he couldn't control his own zipper. And a lot of people in the monasteries can't control their sexual urges and don't get control over their body and their emotions. So they go hide in a monastery. But that doesn't stop them, as we know. So what happens is sex is a powerful, it is an innate thing in animals, in nature. It's pure pleasure. It's connected to the dopamine and the serotonin in the brain. And that you can get addicted to those drugs. I just watched a great movie about you can get having people afraid of you. Is an adrenaline, an addiction. You can be addicted. That fear, because they're afraid, can pump through your system. And you actually are an addict to that, but you have to have somebody fearful of you. You can become a sex addict. You just want pleasure. Because when that happens,
it gives them a rush.
Yes, it's a biological.
It gives them a rush, yes.
Well, there's nerves. That our whole body is a organ. It's our body, our brain responds to pain or pleasure. And in both cases, there's chemicals, there's dopamine, cortisol, adrenaline happening all the time. And once the person finds this is pleasurable, eating, okay, having taking care of their own business, they get addicted. They want that in their brain. They're looking for peace. Some people go to alcohol. Some people do this because you're small. You can't fight back. Probably happened to them as children. That's what you do. And you're not in control of your, you won't deny yourself, okay, that. And you have fantasies, and it's probably done to them. And they just carry on this spiritual, it's sort of, hey, we're raising our children. They are our fruit. We can do anything to them. And they
That's
will
right.
produce, they will produce what comes from the family.
Okay, I think someone's trying to ask a question. I don't know if it's if it's Pamela or if it's Roberta. I'm not sure.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well,
whom is it?
It's Pamela. I wanted to know if you think that people that are adults that were children and sexually abused, do you think they're grieving the loss of their sexual innocence sometimes?
Say that again now. People who what?
Adult survivors of child sexual abuse, do you think that in life they're grieving the loss of their sexual innocence and going through the grieving process?
No. Because here's what happens. When they were a child, if anything outside of the normal that's supposed to be in a loving relationship, God created the spirit will leave the body. He puts memory blocks. He will form multiple personalities. Go watch the movie Three Faces of Eve with Joanne Woodward. Any trauma, okay, she's under the house playing. The culture was when grandma died, you go and kiss the dead body. It was a way of, you know, you wouldn't grieve so about her. They were holding her. She didn't want to kiss. You know, she probably loved her grandmother. She couldn't stand the thought of it. She split at the kiss. One of her personalities that got formed, because here's how it works. God says, you think in your heart a certain way. That's who you are. So she created a person. It became Eve Black, who could kiss, who was tough, who could kiss the grandmother. And Eve White became the fearful. She got married. Okay, and this fight was going on. She didn't. Eve White did not remember school, teachers, and eventually, you know, she's in the hospital, and the doctor's explaining there's two of you in there, but there's only one body. And so the abusers have already lived in this, and when they do the abusing, they are probably taking on the personality of their abuser. And when the abusing is over with, it just dissipates and they're a normal person. They don't know what you're talking about because you would hear it even from O.J. Simpson when he said, I didn't kill my wife. Charlie did. Okay? So that we are capable in our soul of creating other people to live through a trauma, to do the trauma. We leave our bodies, out of bodies experience. We are able to block off the bad stuff. Okay? And what happens is in the Three Faces of Eve, when she got with a loving psychiatrist, her ideal husband left her. She gave her child to her parents. She wasn't capable of raising them. She got in a loving relationship. I love you. Jane was able to be created, who probably she was always supposed to be, in a loving relationship that could raise the child. And the other two sat in the psychiatrist's office and said they felt like they were dying. They were not capable of raising the little girl. They had to disappear. So some people, you have to have therapists that understand multiple personalities, the formation of them. They know there are a defense mechanism for trauma. And their thoughts are, yeah, but you're an adult now. You don't need them, so we need to let go of them. But it's if you... And now an adult, you have lived this way, fractured and you have a family system in there. You have little ones that cry and weep and hurt and abuse. You have bullies in there, boys and girls, all kinds of stuff. Abusers in there, non-abusers, ones that hate, ones that hate. And it takes a well-trained therapist to know that.
Mm-hmm.
So they're always talking about integration. So you have to watch some true
mm-hmm.
life movies, read some stories about people who have had this trauma. There's plenty of stories out there from people. They didn't know much about child. Sybil, great story. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
And go ahead.
If, when a person is facing their death, do they really go through the stages that Elizabeth Kubler-Ross talked about, denial, anger, bargaining?
Well, yeah, the soul part probably can. It depends on the person's soul, how they were trained. If a person's a Christian, they might be very happy they're leaving. They go in to be mm-hmm. with Jesus. They're getting out of this horrible world that's ick, that they don't feel like they belong in, and they just want some kind of peace. Some people go through that process. Other people, you know, you just got to catch them like the Catholics did on their deathbed. Get them saved and bye. See you later. I'll catch up with you. Others, they're going to be angry at their death, and they're going to go out death angry. Everybody's different. And for most survivors,
I think you answered her question. Hold on a second here. I just want to make a comment with everything that you're saying. With the MPD, all right, as they used to call it, okay, they used to call it MPD,
yeah.
which is what you're referring to.
Yeah.
Yes, people can integrate, all right, the personalities can integrate. This is something that takes a very, very long time, many times, to do. And,
that's what
the
psychologists say, yes.
Right, they have to have,
God.
You know, the best
but
of help.
God.
They have to have,
but
yes, they have
God.
To have the best
God
of help.
No, God, psychology
mm-hmm.
says long time. God says
mm-hmm.
my time, so it is different. I've done it, I've seen
what?
It happen both ways.
What's that? What did you say here?
Okay, in psychology, there is protocols on how the integration is to occur,
mm-hmm.
how long it will take, and the process. That's psychology, psychiatrist. If they,
mm-hmm.
if you get with one that believes in it. But I have been working with God for a long time. He says, yeah, I know that system, but I have a different way of doing it, and it doesn't take, don't have to go through all that. So sometimes you have to, there's nothing wrong with either way, but some people don't get training in this. They don't believe in multiple. Some psychiatrists do. Some psychologists do, but others don't. At the master's level, therapist or
mm-hmm.
marriage and family, they don't get the training. It's usually the psychologist and the psychiatrist. Pastors don't get it at all. Now, at the same time, there is a spiritual component. There is God. There is memory. There is the Holy Spirit. There's all kinds of stuff going on at the same time. But if you stay in just the regular system and you think, right, Joyce Myers is a great one to listen to. She would say when she married Dave Myers, Dave must have thought she was 28 different people.
Mm-hmm.
She had been
mm-hmm.
abused by her father, okay, for a long time. Now, you listen to the, she laughs about it, but you listen. She will say, because she won't admit it, I had just a strong personality. And then if you listen to her enough, she'll say, well, Dave must have thought I was 28 different, because she was, to survive her abuse and to her first marriage. But that's about all she's ever going to say, because she doesn't want to admit that she had him, she had therapy for him, because then you wouldn't think very much of her, and you wouldn't buy her books. But you have to listen to people carefully. And a lot of people that get arrested, they go, it wasn't me. I didn't do it. And they probably didn't. It was somebody else inside of them that did it.
Right.
Wasn't me. Whoever you were talking to. O.J. Simpson said, then he found that there was this football player. He discovered after he retired from football, he had multiple personalities from his childhood. Didn't even know he had some that would go out like warriors out on the football field. But then he had another one who's off the field. Okay? And I asked God about this. I said, what's going on? He said, hey, I am a multiple. I am whatever I need to be. If I need to be a judge or a father or a God or a mother, I am that I am. And because I am that, I have made my children with that same ability to create in themselves somebody else who can take the hit. That's usually what happens in childhood. And then the spirit will actually, have an out-of-body experience out of fear. And will get back in the body and really won't know what happened. It might watch it, but it'll forget about it. And that somebody went through it. And the mind and the spirit are capable of creating a person to go through the abuse and still stay spiritually sort of pure, and it didn't happen to me. And if you watch
that. Is that why sometimes these Christians that were tortured or Christians that are tortured can become like Stephen, you know what I'm saying? They're in a different spiritual realm. You see what I'm saying? Because as a body we couldn't handle it.
God gave our both in our biological mind. If you read it, let's see where it is, it's in let's see. It says, as you think in your heart. I have worked with people, they think they're a clock. Because when they look to go, if I become a clock on the wall, I can't get, this abuse isn't happening to me. But they become a clock, but somebody takes the abuse, usually a tough person. I had a young lady that I worked with. She formed a teenager's, a lot of protectors in there. But if you listen to the people when they get arrested, you go, wasn't me.
That's
okay,
right.
I didn't do it. Charlie did it. Well, who's Charlie? He didn't say. They're not going to give away the family, the system that is their protection.
Let me say something with that. Let me say something with that, Pastor, because I'm working with a girl that has over 20 personalities, and she sends me cards at times, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And all of her personalities, and you know, by looking at the signatures, they are definitely not made by one person, okay? There's just no way.
No, they're different.
It's so weird.
They can be right-handed, left-handed.
Yes.
One personality can drink.
Male, female.
And another
male,
one.
Female.
They're all ages. Now, that's the creative ability of God at work to save you during those hard times from the fright and the fear of going, we'll call it mental, okay? Now, what happens is it forms helpers and sisters. It cannot physically run. But remember what God said, I will make a way of escape for you when
Amen.
It's too bad. Okay? Mm-hmm. Now, we don't really know what that means, but when we were a child, he made a way. And you start seeing this. Okay? You can't physically get away. You can't mentally get away. So he made a way for somebody to take it, and the most important part, escaped. Some of them go into self-trances. They go into make-believe worlds. Okay?
Oh, yeah.
All kinds of things. Now, in mental health therapy, it is known, it's now called dissociative identity disorder. Some psychologists train and study it, and they're good at it. They combine the hypnosis, deprogramming. It doesn't shock them if they're talking to a boy or a little kid. But most master's-level people don't have this training. Your pastors don't have it.
No, they don't.
Christian therapists don't have it. higher on up, okay, in the pecking order. And sometimes the system has to protect itself. Some of them, once they trust you, somebody will come out. That was what you learned in civil. Somebody going to take you to the doctor. But they, and some will do all the talking, and others for the system to try to protect it. So there's a lot that goes on during child abuse, that when the child was in the womb, the spirit came inside. It came in with these abilities and gifts, because God knew it was going to be dropped down into horrible ick down here, into families, into the world, and he gave the spirit, even the soul and the mental mind, a way of surviving and escaping. And like I said,
so
in mental... go ahead.
Do you feel that this happens with homosexuality and things like that? Like,
yes.
People that think they're another sex when they're really...
Yes, that's all it is. Yep. It's the,
it can take any form.
Spirit of, spirit of confusion is at work there. Sometimes a child is in the womb. I want a boy and I get a girl. They're already feeling rejection. Sometimes the parents want the opposite sex. Okay? And they got what they got. And they already start treating the child, even in infancy, because that's what they wanted. And some people go, well, to get affection and love, I got to be there. Okay? Then some people get abused. They go, oh, well, if I become a boy, I won't get abused. I'll become the abuser. I'll be safe. Mm. So sometimes it's a safety mechanism. Okay? It's once you get into it and you understand how the mind works, okay, homosexuality used to be considered a mental illness, abnormal.
Yeah.
But in mental illness, here's what they said. Here's how we determine you got a mental health problem. One, it affects you and your family. Two, you can't and be a normal citizen and vote and do that, and you can't hold a job.
Right.
If you have those three things, then you've got mental health problems. And the homosexuals said, we're all in committed relationships. We're all working. In fact, we're making more money. We're computer people. And we can hold down a job. So your definition from the World Health Organization and the American Psychiatric Association said that was the determining factors for anybody to be diagnosed with a mental health problem. So they lobbied and said, that doesn't count us. We're all in a committed 30, 40-year relationship. We are law-abiding as citizens. We work and make money and pay tax. How can you say? So they took it out of the DSM. It's no longer considered a mental health. I said in their meetings. The difference is a transgender says, the body I have, my thoughts and feelings and mind don't match up with it. In homosexuality, a male says, I'm happy to be a male, and I love males. And a lesbian says, I'm happy to be a girl, and I love girls. A trans are saying, I got the wrong body. Because what's on the inside of me, my feelings, doesn't line up. Okay? So you're dealing all sort of different levels. And the problem for most pastors, there's no training on it when they go to school. There's no education. You get on medication, like for the lady. And the psychiatrists are happy. The problems are solved. You just go live your life, be with your family, take your meds, and, you know, that kind of thing. So,
now, how do you, as a pastor, connect this with the scriptures that people try to say against homosexuality?
Say that again.
How do you connect what psychology is saying about homosexuality and what the Bible says? Is it different or the same?
Yeah, okay.
Mm-hmm.
I have to learn that the biological body and the soul are connected and are one. And they're all messed up. But the spirit part that's in there is trapped in ignorance and darkness. And the spirit takes on the personality from the soul. Now, when the person gets saved, it's only the spirit that gets born again. The soul has not changed yet. It's not been renewed. Nothing changes to the biological body. Now, when God talks about homosexuality within the Old Testament, they were flesh creatures with no Holy Spirit. He said, I got to get you to control your biological sexual urges. Now, homosexuality was rampant from all of the nations, child pornography, child sex. And he says, look, you guys have got to be different, but you don't have the Holy Spirit yet, okay? But I'm trying to help you get control of your zipper, okay? And here's what, and because none of them, so when you get born again, your spirit is not a male or a female. It's a non-gender spirit being. It don't even have sex. It doesn't watch TV, doesn't eat earthly food. The homosexual parts in the thinking of the soul that has not been renewed yet from the spirit and all the knowledge the spirit gets after, not the Old Testament, remember, that's just for the flesh and the soul. You can study it and use it if you do it right. But now the spirit's born again. Now comes the teaching of the pastors to get knowledge to the spirit. The spirit's job is to tell the soul and the what it learned, that's not right. God's not pleased with that behavior anymore. You need to change, and you need to control your body. I work with a lady with a lesbian. She asked
Okay, hold on. Pastor, we only have 3 minutes left. Pamela, I want to suggest to you, I know it went very fast. There's so much involved when you speak about the spirit and also with mental illness and all the things that go, and sexual abuse, the whole things we were talking about. Pamela, if you would like to connect with the pastor, because it seems like you have a connection where you have a lot of questions that maybe she could answer or teach you about. You have some things that you'd like to understand better. Would you like a telephone number or something, or a website or something, so that you could contact her directly?
Definitely. Okay,
let's hurry up because we only have 2 minutes now. Deborah, what would you like to give her, Pastor?
Okay, I'll give
How can she connect
email.
With you?
Okay, my email address, and then we can go for that. It's Pastor Deborah, Deborah, at all lowcap, agapeloveishere.org, all one word. And I think my
agape
phone number is on the
Well, I'm going to do that for her again. Pastor, P-A-S-T-O-R,
Deborah.
Okay, dot Deborah.
No, Pastor Deborah.
Pastor Deborah. Okay. Is Agape? How do you say that? Agape?
Agape.
Agape.
Okay. Also, my phone number is on NASCA's contact sheet. If they go to that, it's there.
That's much easier. That's much, because when I was contacting you, I was having a problem with your email address. Okay.
And if you just
go to the contact page.
I'll get back with you.
All right. Do you know how to go to the contact page? You just go to the front of the website and it says contact. Okay.
Yes, I think it's under there. It says Pastor Deborah phone number or something.
Okay. As long as you have something to work with. We only have 60 seconds. I have to wrap up this show. And I kept very, very quiet because you were covering so much, Pastor. And that's very good because you have a connection here with Deborah. And maybe there's a lot of people that have the same questions, too, that need to speak to you.
Okay.
Right?
All right. Here's what I'd like them to do is go to NASCA's, put three or four blogs on there about what is broken, the level of the spirit, and then there's a featured article that's on the NASCA front page about the intersection of faith and mental health. And they all need to read those. They need to look at the blogs. They're all videos. It's on your blog page and the featured articles, and that'll help them get started.
Okay,
thank
good.
You,
I have to really. All right, thank you so much for coming on. And Roberta, thank you so much. And Pamela, thank you, for coming on. I have to end the show now. And it was quite a show. It was very informative, though. Thank you so much, Pastor. And for everybody out there, stay safe. Say your prayers. I think you should wear a mask. And we'll talk to you tomorrow. Tomorrow we'll have a special guest on where they tell their story. That's on Monday, Wednesdays, and Fridays. So to everyone, good night. Take care and stay safe. Good night. Good night.
Good night.
Bye-bye.
Another tomorrow, 'cause that dawn was